My next guest will be making his way to Talia Hall on September 3rd, and you better get those tickets early because Chicago loves stand-up comedian Nick DiPaolo.
Trying to lose weight. Don't you hate you're on a diet? Your skinny friends give you dieting advice. My buddy goes, hey, if you feel like having ice cream, have an apple instead. Yeah, I always confuse those two cravings. I can't count the number of times I've been into a Granny Smith and went, what is this, Chunky Monkey? This is delicious. How about I put the apple in your mouth and cook you, you skinny b-? You're low fat.
Nick DiPaolo is a regular at Zany's and he's a part of Just for Laughs, the festival when it was here in Chicago. Nick is a New York comic. He could be seen on FX Louie as well as other television programs, including Comedy Central. He was a regular on the roast there. He's also a regular on radio, heard on Howard Stern. He hosts his own podcast, Nick DiPaolo Podcast. And it's my pleasure to welcome the great Nick DiPaolo to the download tonight. Nick, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Justin. I started to laugh because I'm like, hey, he found one of the few clean jokes I have in my career. And then I hear the bleep at the end.
We decided we wanted to keep the bleep in because it's more authentic. You know, if we went for just clean stuff, people would be like, that's not Nick.
No, that's, I'm not a dirty cop. I mean, I like to curse, but my material's not inherently dirty. You know what I mean?
I know, yeah.
I like to drop a few F-bombs here and there. Keeps people, they have the attention span of a crack baby today, so it keeps them focused.
Keeps them focused. All right, let's talk about how often you get through Chicago. I said you're a regular at Zany's. I mean, you seem to have a presence, I mean, as a touring stand-up comedian. But talk about your relationship with the clubs here in Chicago.
I used to. Do you remember the Funny Farm?
Yeah,
what was it called?
Yeah.
I was there twice a year for like, I don't know how many years, 5-6 years in a row. And that went away, and then I just sort of, new clubs open and stuff, and that's my problem. I don't, you're supposed to hammer a market, and that's how you get a following. So Zany's came a-calling a few years ago, and I said, I love Chicago. It really is one of my favorite cities, And when Zany's called my agent, I was like, yeah, hell yeah, And so I did Zany's downtown in Rosemont the last couple of years. And sold a lot of tickets the last time I was there, so I said, let's try Talia Hall, and we shall see. But it's one of my favorite comedy towns, and people are like, it's like a big city, but it's got a small town attitude,
Yeah.
So, except for the shootings, but
you'll be all right. But Talia Hall is a place that a lot of comics are coming through. We have a lot of comics that come on and talk about playing there or playing at other more rock venues, where they're, and that seems to be a shift where comedians are leaving the sort of the confines of the stand-up comedy club, like we talked to the Funny Firm and Zany's, and moving to more venues that are multi-purpose that might have a band at 7 o'clock and a comic at 9. Do you find yourself in your career making that transition as well?
Yeah, you kind of, after so many years, and this is nothing because we would be nothing without places like Zany's, so I don't want to,
Yeah, right.
I don't want to be disrespectful to them, but after 28, 29 years on the road, it would be nice to go in and get out after one night as opposed to three or four. I mean, I've been to Milwaukee 61 times since I started doing this, and how many times can you go to the Bowling Hall of Fame or... whatever it is, the spam factory, whatever they
got up there, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it really is. The theaters, it's just more freeing. And the people are, they're not yelling at the waitress for their chicken fingers. And there's not a bachelorette party, with some fat chick with a tiara on her head. And she's yelling over you. You do a theater, people actually... You might even see a sports jacket in the audience.
You might. Bring it back to a classier time, right?
Nick, well, it's just people, when they go there, they're not being distracted by 19 different, they're really there to see the comedy. They pay a little more. And, and like I said, it's after being on the road that long, it feels good to fly in and fly out. Although, I might fly in a few days early for Chicago because, the morning guy, I don't know if I can mention his name.
Well, you're on it. Of course you can, yeah.
But Mancow, I want to get in there and do a few, days live with him.
You could do 2-3 days, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
But I wouldn't do that any other city, really. I just enjoy Chicago.
Well, let's talk about, your comedy. I'm interested because I've known your work. I'm a Howard Stern fan, and knowing you and a lot of the comics in New York, I'm surprised. I mean, do you consider yourself a political comic?
No. And that's the thing. I really don't. My podcast is kind of political right now because, I mean, come on. I like to be socially relevant. And if you're not talking about what's going on politically right now, you got to admit it's the most interesting thing that's happened in politics in years. But no, the thing is, Justin, the business is so left-wing, so liberal, that when you're a guy like me who leans right a little bit, they make you out to be, you know, this, you know, far right, and you get labeled a conservative comic. And first of all, I'm a comedian first, and right. then I just happen to be a little right in my politics second. But so I'm not like Bill Maher. I don't go out and do an hour of pure political stuff, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, at least not yet, but that's not really what I ever did. But Colin Quinn summed it up best. I said, Colin, you know, I said, I'm getting this label as like a conservative. He goes, you're not, he goes, you're not a political comedian per se. He said, but he said, you could be telling a joke about McDonald's and people are going to know how you voted.
That's
you know,
true.
Leave it to Colin Quinn to you know, get
that's,
right
that's
to the
meat
of the,
I was reading something, I think it was a Guardian article about you, but it essentially pulled the quote that, you know, you can't really be edgy if you're a liberal comic, or it's hard to be to be edgy if you're liberal. What do you mean by that?
What I mean, well, is this notion that somehow, first of all, they go, well, isn't comedy in the arts about being the underdog? And all these, I don't know where this crap came from. What, I had to be bullied as a kid and have crappy parents to get into the arts, and you know, I'm a white heterosexual male, that means I'm part of the problem or whatever. And as far as, like I said, as far as you can't be a liberal comic and be edgy because you're for the status quo. All the political correctness, the safe spaces, all that garbage that goes on right now that's ruining comedy and the world, by the way, that all comes from the left. There's nothing edgy about a black lesbian comic bad-mouthing white people or bad-mouthing the... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I will get in a lot more trouble talking about race as a white guy because political correctness, in my opinion, was created for one reason, to mute guys like me, white heterosexual males, Christian males, actually. But there's nothing edgy about a black comic making fun of white people or a female comic making fun of men or a gay comic making fun. Tracy Morgan said if his baby, when his wife was pregnant, if the baby was gay, he was going to kill it. And again, just obviously joking, but he still has a career.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever said that, do you really think that even let me anywhere near show business?
Well, I mean, there's something about a safe space that's on stage. And this has come up with college campuses, but it's also come up all over comedy clubs where, you know, those kind of jokes obviously made to push the boundary, to push the almost the comfort zone of the audience in front of you. Those jokes are being criticized in ways that, you know, the comics can't get up on a club on the Lower East Side and be able to do it without people, you know, trumpeting it or, you know, sort of amplifying it to the world, you know, what this comic said that. I mean, is that what you mean, too, when you talk about the PC world kind of getting in and ruining comedy?
Well, what's happening is you know, it's generational, and you got all these people now, these young comics that come off college campuses or wherever filled with that mush. And you actually have people now running comedy clubs. I heard at some clubs, like somebody got in trouble recently at a club in the Midwest. I forget who the comic was. He didn't even know what he said. And they're like, yeah, we're sending you home. I forget what reason they gave him. It was like a double booking or something. Mm-hmm. Then he went home and he found it online. It was because he made a rape joke. And like three people sent emails to the club. Mm. So now you have club managers, these young people who actually buy into this crap. You know?
Yeah.
But like I said, how many times have you, you know, there's a definite double standard. It's, you know. I just, the safe spaces and all that. I mean, I can't believe there's comics that are actually for some of that stuff, for censorship. Do you hear about the guy up in Montreal? A different country now, but this kid, I think his last name was Ward, I want to say. He got fined $35,000 for a joke he did on stage about some disfigured kid that was a singer up there or something.
Well, it makes you, you know, harken back to the days of Lenny Bruce or even here in Chicago where, you know, the police would go in because they didn't like what the comics were saying on stage. Or,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was there's a lot of that history and that sort of, you know, pushing the edges and censorship when it comes to stand-up comedy. And this sounds very similar to that.
Yeah, but we're regressing. We should have learned from that, right? It was silly to have cops go on stage. I mean, shouldn't we be progressing? And that's the ironic thing. That crap back then, Lenny Bruce is saying, obviously a lot of liberal hippie, you know, he was, you know, anti-establishment, and he was getting shut down by the more conservative. Mm-hmm. And now it's the other way around.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's your lesbian college professor at NYU who will have you arrested. Michigan State, they have speech codes. Literally they have people walking around listening for racial slurs. Michigan State, I read that. I mean, and that's not coming from the right, okay? That's coming from the far left. And as far as the race issue, that's where it's getting totally...
Well, let me ask
weird.
You, I mean, because a lot of the, like you mentioned, the the monitors of the stuff will happen in social media. It'll happen in new ways that we communicate and that everyone in the spaces. As a comic, and we've talked to other comics about that, how has your transition been to Twitter, to Facebook, to other, you know, do you feel like it's a good thing for comedy to have this sort of immediate impact and immediate place to tell jokes and to converse?
I haven't. It's good as far as marketing, you know, to say, hey, here's Raul B, come see me. And I'm not even great at that. You show me a comedian who's a great marketer, I'll show you a crappy comedian and vice versa. You know what I mean? I went to school for marketing. I had a solid C+ at the University of Maine. I suck. It's the thing I know least about. But in that regard, it's good. But in the other regard, it's bad. You know what I mean? Somebody record you saying something a little off color, and then they throw it online. Look what this guy said, and I don't care. It hasn't changed me an inkling. I don't give a rat's. I've been doing this 29 years. You can't hurt me. I am not going to change. And there's, thank God, there's still a few people left who appreciate that, and hopefully some of them live in Chicago.
That's right. Nick DiPaolo will be at, he'll be, so this is great, he's going to be at Talia Hall on September 3rd, so get your tickets now, or about a little bit over a month out. I can't thank you enough, Nick, for joining us tonight. I'm a fan of yours, and I've laughed hysterically at some of your un-PC stuff throughout the years, and I appreciate you. Continue your work. Nick DiPaolo will be on stage at Talia Hall on September 3rd.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you for joining us.
If those guys want to hear the podcast, it's on iTunes on Mondays for free, and then they can go to connectpal.com/Nick, and you can pay, it's $3.99 a month. You get three more shows a week. So, and it's, you know, it's outrageous. It's stuff that I would get arrested on stage for. So
the new stage. All right. Thanks, Nick. We appreciate it.
Thanks.